Show, Phil Hendry.
World famous Phil Hendry Show, every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, a news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about, where truth is our bitch and where we go places other talk shows wish they could, but they can't, so they don't. And by the way, as well as being on PhilHendryShow.com right now with a live video cast that we call Phil TV in HD, we are also on, we have archive streaming, I should say, at PhilHendryRadio.com. So if you're not a Backstage Pass member, you'd like to know, well, what's it all about? And, you know, I want to hear some of these archives Phil talks about. Well, we have 24/7 streaming archive radio over at PhilHendryRadio.com. You can listen to that. And 1 week from today, we roll out our brand new podcast. It'll be 2 days a week that we will feature our podcast. And that will be, you know, brand spanking new material. We'll also throw some of our archive material in there, though. It will also be completely uncensored, and it will be available to you wherever, however. So there's a lot of different ways to get Phil. And you can look at PhilHendryRadio.com as sort of a free version of the Internet experience of our show. But at Phil Hendry Show, which is where we are right now, grab yourself a backstage pass and be a part of radio history. All right, now, I don't want to bring on Ben just yet, but we are going to play a clip from our show on Friday night, and this is Colleen Kristen Brewster was with us. Ms. Brewster was on talking about a cruise that she was going to have for Mother's Day that was going to be a cruise for abusive mothers, mothers that had actually abused their children. And in fact, one of those mothers that would be on the cruise was Colleen and her brother Ben. Is his last name Brewster?
I believe so, yeah.
Ben Brewster, okay. Listen to this as we got to know Ben Brewster, and it was pretty interesting. And we're going to have him on the show here in just a moment to talk further. But here is a clip from Friday Night Show.
And he's been with us at our celebration here tonight for Megan. Ben, are you looking forward to seeing Mom on Sunday?
I was, yes.
Okay, and
hold on for a minute.
Excuse me, so wait. And when you see Mommy, are you going to be happy? Okay, so that you can see.
What happened to him? Is that Ben, the guy that we're...
What are you laughing at? Ben does a lot of our flyers. Ben does a lot of our artwork. And
what happened to him?
I told you he had scalding water thrown on his face.
And no, but I mean, he can't speak.
Well, he doesn't speak because he's had to wear a mask, and that the doctor explained it's what's called Phantom of the Opera syndrome. And in Phantom of the Opera syndrome, he looks in the mirror and he sees a mask on his face, and he starts to sound like a ghoul. You're not really a ghoul, are you, Ben?
No.
Have him speak up.
No, I'm not really a ghoul. I was just making fun.
See, he was making fun.
Ben, let me talk to you for a minute.
Mr. Henry, what's up?
No. Talk to me with your regular voice.
Yes, sir.
Why do you go,
Well, it's called Phantom of the Opera syndrome. I don't know if you're familiar with it. In which I saw myself in the mirror and I look like ghoulish, you know.
Well, you have a British accent.
Yes, I was raised in Great Britain. I went to boarding school there. That's my father, but my father finally took custody of us when I was in my middle school years.
And was Colleen with you?
No, Colleen, I must tell the truth.
No, I wasn't. I was with Mother, and I was abused.
Lying. You know you're lying. Yes, she was abused, but she spent much of...
Phil, you are a whore. You know that. I'm telling you.
Colleen Kristen Brewster's a whore.
Oh, my God. I knew he was coming.
Wait, what is going on?
Hold on. Get him. He's going out the back way. Get him.
I got him.
You'll never get away with it, Colleen. Never. Yeah, I like this. Yeah, this is my kind of party now, Phil. I got him. Phil, I'll talk to you in a little bit, okay?
Well, what are you doing?
Really, it's none of your concern. This is going to be a real good party now.
All right, that's what we heard on Friday night. Ben Brewster joins us now live here on the Phil Hendry Show, and he is in San Francisco. And, Ben, thank you for being on our program.
Thank you.
Ben, what happened there?
Well, as I had told you, and as I had told your producer, I have been associated with my sister and only go with calling Kristen Brewster for quite some time. It was my intention, obviously, to be a part of the business and to be part of the broadcast on Friday night, but I had never intended to take the charade as far as we did.
What do you mean by the charade? What was this all just a put-on?
It was a part of Colleen's sales pitch. It was part of the marketing plan that the easy as she goes or easy does it, whatever the bloody hell the name it was, I really don't know. But this was a cruise for abusive women.
Right. But so what happened between you and her?
Our mother was really never abusive. She was on your program.
Your mother was never abusive?
No, she was not. And Colleen was on your program. You know perfectly well that there was no such abuse that took place in our home. And
Now, let me just, I want to be able to sort of guide this discussion of this river of information that we're getting here. You were raised in England?
I was raised for several years at a boarding school in London, yes.
Okay. Colleen was raised by who?
Well, we were both raised by our father and our mother equally. They were joint custody. But there was never really any abuse that Colleen spoke of.
Well, why did you come on the show and talk as if you were the Phantom of the Opera or whatever that was?
Oh, that was the Ghoul in the Vault.
The what?
The ghoul in the vault is what Colleen calls it.
And the ghoul in the vault. And what was that act? Because I heard you. Can you do some of that?
Well, I don't know that I want to, because I don't want to be seen as some sort of a spectacle, you know. You mean the that?
Yeah.
That was put on. That was primarily for the consumption of those who were on the cruise that I said that I had been abused by our mother, and Colleen put on the fake limp. And
so Colleen was faking a limp. You were faking having been scalded with hot water in order to sell this cruise a little bit better.
Yes, exactly. Now, Colleen crossed the line when she kept on saying that she had been abused by mother, where, you know, she was not allowed to go to the bathroom, this sort of thing, you know. And that's when I decided that I'd come clean.
Now, when you came clean, what? Tell me what exactly. Was there any abuse in your home?
No, certainly not. There was no abuse in our home.
Was there any abuse by your father?
No, there's not. Exactly, no. No abuse. What do you mean? You touched me on my bum or something like that?
Well, any kind of an abusive environment.
No. There's none. Colleen's a liar. And I called her a lying whore on your program because I thought she'd gone too far when she said that she had been abused by our mother to the point where she was not allowed to go to the bathroom, and that I was horribly disfigured wearing a Phantom of the Opera mask, this kind of thing.
But you did go into that whole,
The voice that I'm using is called the Ghoul in the Vault. That voice has nothing to do with having been disfigured, and I took grave exception to that, and I told her so. And she told me to be quite honest with you, she told me to shut my mouth and continue on with my duties there as I was giving out flyers and showing people the table for the captain's dinner and so forth. And that's when I threw the flyers on the floor and I said, well, not be spoken to that way. And I said, come here, I won't be talked to like that. And I said, see here, this is all not very kosher. This is not going to do at all. And that's when I went on the air and I said, she's lying whore. That I certainly...
Okay, hold on for a minute. So your sister lied about what? She lied about...
She lied about everything.
She lied about being abused by your mother. She lied about having to limp.
Yes, she never abused at all. And she doesn't walk with a limp. And,
Why would she lie about your mother?
Because her mother... My mother and Colleen never got along since Colleen had the affair with my mother's second husband. You see, Colleen and I were...
Your Colleen had an affair with her own stepfather.
Yes. Well, Colleen's about, 23, 24 years of age, you see. But she had an affair with Colonel Velcott.
And Colonel Velcott?
That's correct, yes.
A colonel in what?
Oh, I don't know. The colonel in some sort. I think it was the colonel in the Kentucky National Guard.
And a colonel in the what?
A colonel in the Kentucky National Guard, if memory serves. He was a colonel for several years. I think he took quite well to being called colonel. And quite enjoyed it. Loved to put it on, you know. Loved to sit around with and say, why don't we all drink some Kentucky bourbon and some brand, some creek water, you know. And you wouldn't want me to rust my pipe, that kind of thing, you see.
And all right, so this is a guy that Colleen had an affair with.
Well, he's not a guy. He's my mother's second husband.
You're technically your stepfather.
Technically my stepfather, yes.
So Colleen had an affair with this guy.
Yes, she had an affair with a man, and it made my mother quite angry, you see. And she was quite put out by all of that, you see. And so at last I heard, mother, really doesn't have much to do with Colleen. Matter of fact, father doesn't have much to do with Colleen either, because he doesn't trust her. My father wouldn't trust Colleen with a set of silverware or some nickel-plated dinnerware from Costco. So, you see...
Colleen is not in very good favor with your family.
Colleen's not in very good favor with my family at all. In fact, she's barely in good favor with me. She'd be a partner in this travel business of hers, which has done frightfully poor of late. Frightfully poor. But nonetheless, I decided I'd hang in, give it the old college try, and see what came of it.
All right, so, Ben, what I'm getting here, let's take a break. We're with Ben Brewster, the brother of Colleen Kristen Brewster, who is giving us the lowdown on what happened here Friday night. Colleen was with us advertising her cruise, easy does it cruise, or easy as she goes cruise for abusive mothers. Colleen saying frequently that she was abused by her own mother, that her brother there, Ben, was abused. In fact, even to the extent that she limped and Ben was disfigured, and now he is telling us that it was all just a lie. Interesting. We'll be back here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The
and,
Phil Henry Show.
That I never masturbated in my life.
Hey, welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Henry Show. Our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. I told you, Ben, that we would bring your sister on the air, okay?
Oh, that's perfectly fine. I've got no problem with talking to Colleen. But I don't want Colleen to do is lie like a whore. I don't like being called a whore, Ben. You know that I'm not a whore. I can say you're a whore, but you lie like one. And how do I lie like a whore? Well, you said the other day you were talking about how you were limping. And it was a beautiful setup, Phil, and I don't know why he has decided to come on your program and talk gay. You're gay, aren't you? No, I'm not gay. This is old, Phil. This is very old. She keeps saying that I'm gay. I'm not gay. Even though I might sound a bit feminist only because of my upbringing. Why do you talk like that? Because I told you I went to a boarding school in England, you dumb slut. And, I don't want to be talked to.
Or let's not talk that way. There's no need for that, is there?
But I most certainly think there is when she is calling my mother, her mother, our mother, and also calling my father, her father, our father, saying that my brother abused her, that father didn't pay attention to her. Oh, that might very well be. That would probably explain why it was you were dating Colonel Delcott. I dated the colonel because I had a great deal of feeling for him, and our mother didn't treat him well. And I think it's really, really wrong of you to say that the colonel was not an individual of quality or a man of substance just because he comes from Kentucky and he was a colonel in the National Guard. I didn't say that he wasn't a man of substance, did I? I said that you dated him because you had father issues. That's what I'm saying. What? Huh? Well, I didn't have any father issues. Where do you get that? Just because I was going out with the colonel, he happened to be my stepfather. And the other thing, Phil, is she talks as if she's suffered some massive electric shock. And
what do you mean by that?
What are you talking about? Well, the way she's always going, she talks as if she picked up a live electrical cable laying on a wet street after an ice storm.
Oh, wow. That, you know, you're not going to impress anyone, Ben, with all of the things what you know. No one cares about that. What I'm trying to say to everyone is On the Go with Colleen Kristen Brewster is about looking forward and not backwards. And that's what I was trying to say.
If you're looking forward and not backwards, then why was even making up things about our mother?
Well, that's a very good point.
What?
That's a good point. Why would you make things up about your mother?
You know, Phil, I've hold on for just a minute because I'm talking to my brother and he has decided to drag my reputation through the mud. And
well, I'm sorry that he's doing that.
All right, Phil, I can really handle this. Listen, Colleen.
Well, hold on for a minute. I know that he's trying to tell the truth here, Colleen. Is there not room in your world for the truth?
What truth is that?
But you know very well that you don't walk with a limp, you lie.
I don't walk with a limp. The only reason why I walked around here with a limp, do you know, Phil, I spent 2 days dragging my left leg behind me so that people would feel as if they were among their own. And what I meant by that was...
Hold on, just a minute. How would the woman who actually inflicted this sort of injury on a young girl, how would they feel that they're among their own?
I mean, there were family members here, too.
Well, all right, but if you're dragging your left leg behind you, a great many of the women are going to feel uncomfortable with that. You said yourself that you didn't want to remind them of the abusive past, that you wanted it all to be brand new.
All right, hold on for just a minute.
No, I didn't say that.
Hold on for just a minute, because we're getting so far out, it's, like, freaking me out. You were dragging your left leg behind you.
Who are you talking to me?
No, I'm talking Colleen.
Yes, I dragged my left leg behind me because that was part of On the Go with Colleen Kristen Brewster. Brewster. That's the part of Colleen. How do we pronounce her last name?
I don't know. How many times I told you we pronounce her last name Brewster? Oh, my God, is she brain dead? And is it...
I forgot. So, On the Go with Colleen Kristen Brewster is about the Easy As She Goes cruise and the women who are abusive. And some of these women may need to be reminded of the things they did, and that's why I dragged my left leg.
Yeah, but you never did you ever tell anyone why you were dragging your left leg?
I told you because our mother attempted to take a meat axe to it.
Okay, hold on for a minute. Hold on. Your brother did a service to us all when he came on here today and said that you lied. And
I didn't lie to hurt anybody individually.
You're lying now. You lied to hurt our mother by saying that she took a meat axe to your leg. Well, your left leg is perfectly fine as you dragged it behind you. And it's the most pathetic thing I've...
Hold on. So you didn't have an injury to your leg, you didn't have any problem at all, you were just dragging your left leg behind you.
I was, and you know something? I was doing a pretty good job of it. If we could just take this conversation for a moment away from the whole idea that maybe I lied or maybe I just put in a little theater into our cruise. You're walking around and you're pretending you're the Phantom of the Opera.
Yes, I did that because, it wasn't as egregious, I don't think. And saying that Mother wouldn't allow you to go to the bathroom. And
allow me to demonstrate, Mr. Henry, and you won't be able to see this, but I think it's something that I'm very, very proud of in dragging the left leg. Listen.
You're going to have to explain this.
I'm going to explain it. That's the sound of the elevated heel that I was wearing in the orthopedic shoe hitting the floor every time I was dragging it. Now, imagine if you're a mother that brutalized her or his children because you may not be a her anymore. And
you stick to the point, please.
Hold on. Yeah, stick to the point. I didn't get that last reference.
We had a lot of women here who were transgender, maybe. I don't know. But
who were those?
Never mind, Ben, okay? You're really confusing people.
I don't know what you're talking about. If you say that if he abused his children when he was a her... You know, that confuses things. Now, what you just did there on the phone, what's that supposed to do?
What do you mean, what's it supposed to do?
I think it's supposed to impress you, Mr. Henry, as to how skillful she is at dragging an orthopedic shoe.
Was that what I heard clunking on the floor?
Yeah, it was. It's what we call a Mother Goose shoe.
Reinforced.
What?
It's
a reinforced elevated Mother Goose shoe.
It's a reinforced
Oh, so this is a big joke to you. In that case, Mr. Henry, I bid you a good evening.
Even I told you, she's going to hang up on you.
That's fine. We'll be right back. World famous Phil Henry Show. a reinforced Mother Goose shoe, and
I can stay here and answer questions and things you'd like.
No, not really.
Damn.
Phil Hendry.
Phil, 877-876-7445, world famous Phil Hendry Show, and we thank Colleen Kristen Brewster and her brother Ben Brewster. That's a very bizarre family dynamic, very bizarre, and a lot of, you talk about dysfunction. My mother abused me. No, she didn't. I actually had an affair with my stepfather, of which her mother rightfully or wrongfully, but I suspect more rightfully, bears a grudge. Her brother seems to be the sanest one in the group, and he ain't exactly too tightly wrapped, you know. So we'll just have to follow that as we go. Our number, 877-876-7445, 877-876-PHIL, online at philhendryshow.com. If you'd like a backstage pass, head on over there, and you can watch our live streaming video of the show, as well as streaming live, streaming archive material at philhendryradio.com. Let me get on the line here, Larry Grover from Conservatives of Kern County. Not really going to talk about gay marriage tonight, Larry, although I know that we've talked about it in the past, and I don't know if there's anything you wanted to add to that. I saw a thing here about President Obama, just because he has come out in favor of it.
Yeah, it doesn't mean that there's going to be any health care coverage, and I think that that's the one thing I want to say. I think that some of our gay people, and I have nothing against gay people, absolutely nothing against them at all. I think they are absolutely children of God, and I think they are absolutely equal.
But you don't think they should be allowed to marry?
I do not think they should be allowed to marry, no.
Why?
Because I believe that they are, that it is a wrong act to do what they do.
But they're equal and there's nothing wrong with them.
Well, they're equal and there's nothing wrong with them, except for they do that. And I think that it's a wrong act. I don't know how else to say it. When you are someone such as myself, Phil, I'm a very deeply religious man. And I believe that to have that kind of a interaction with a human being
is against the laws of God.
I believe that it is, and I don't know, but you know, my mother is here and wants me. What do you want me to say? That I had a homosexual experience.
You had a homosexual experience.
Yes, I did in high school. That's why I know about this situation with homosexuals.
You had a homosexual experience. Now, this sheds a lot of light.
No, it doesn't shed a lot of light on anything. No, it does not shed a lot of light.
Phil, this is Carolyn Grover.
Carolyn, how you doing?
I'm good. Larry, I wanted Larry to share that with you because you know that he has, since Marcy and the girls left, has not had a relationship really of any length with any woman. And I always wondered about that. And
you know, the reason why, Phil, is because I was engaged, as you know, in a very, very involved work in trying to get Bill Clinton exposed for what he was, which was a sexual deviant, and I've been trying very desperately to get Obama impeached. These are things that...
I'm going to finish what I want to say, Larry.
You're going to just grab the phone.
I'm going to finish what I... And so I asked Larry to say to you tonight that he had had
So you had a homosexual experience in high school.
You know, don't you love how now that's what this is all about? I came on your program to talk about ancient cave art. And
well, we're going to talk about that, but I just I brought up the whole gay marriage thing, and you went off on...
I didn't go off on anybody. I simply was going to say that there's not going to be any health care. Now, if you're going to try to say that I am latently homosexual, give it up, okay? Because I'm way ahead of you on that. I know that's the trick, and I know that's the trick you pull, Henry. And
what trick do I pull? What are you talking about?
Everybody that's a homophobic, or you call homophobic, you say they're latently gay.
I think you're right now.
Are you interviewing me and Mother?
No, I'm just interviewing you, Mrs. Grover. I appreciate it very much.
I think you're right. I think there's a lot of closet queers.
Hold that, please, if you don't mind, Mother. That I got one foot in it right there because you think you're talking to a gay.
No, I look, Larry. I've never identified you as a guy that is rabidly homophobic. I mean, I'm talking about some guys who really got a problem with it. I've always seen you as a guy who's just as you said, very busy.
Well, that's what I am, very busy.
But I didn't know that you'd had a quote gay experience.
I had the gay. Let's be very clear before you begin to run down the street and celebrate the news that Larry Grover's gay, which I'm not. I was, to be honest with you, tricked into it because it was a friend of mine who was, he had just gotten some bad news from home and he was very devastated and I helped him through it. And it got physical at some point during the night. It was one of those nights where he got the news at about 7, and we went out and had a couple of drinks. I tried to talk him through it. He was just devastated.
What had happened?
It was a death in the family. It was a dead...
A death in the family?
Yeah.
Something dead.
What did I just say to you? I said it was a death. It was a...
Let me have the phone.
You please not grab the phone from me, Mother.
I want to tell Phil what...
Hear what you want to tell Phil. Let's just... It was something died, okay?
Something died, all right.
That's exactly... You know, I can hear the sarcasm.
All right, but I'm not getting any information from you. So, see, I had a friend...
I'm giving you the information. I had a friend in high school.
All right, so the kid... This young man suffered some bad piece of news that you helped him through that night, and somehow it turned physical.
Yes, at about... as I said, he got the news at about 7, and we had some drinks. We went back to... It sounds gay, but we went back to his place, because that was his place that we went to. But for me to say that, it sounds gay, like, oh, we went back to his place. But we...
All right, you went to his house or whatever.
Yeah, and we talked some more, and it became apparent. You know, he was crying and upset. So I, you know, and then next thing I knew, and I had no idea how it happened. I have no idea. But I was in bed. My clothes were off. I think I got tired.
Barry.
Are you still hanging around? Mother, this is so sensitive, this information that I'm giving Phil. I swear to God, I may hit her.
Don't you dare.
Would you tell her to get lost?
Mrs. Grover, put her on the phone.
I think he needs to tell the truth.
Mrs. Grover, you're really only making things worse, okay? Could you just...
I don't want to make things worse.
Well, I know, but if you're just hanging around there...
Did you hear what Mr. Henry said? You're hanging around and making it worse.
He didn't say that. That he likes me.
Mrs. Grover, please.
All right, Bill, but Larry has to face up to the fact that... Yay!
Oh, yeah, that's what Mother... See, she's doing it again. She's doing it again. Are you going to keep doing that all night? Are you going to do it all night, Mother?
All right, what's going on?
Oh, she walks by me in the morning, and some morning she'll walk by and go, gay. Don't do it, Mother. I swear to God, Phil.
Don't lay a hand on her. Mrs. Grover.
I'm sorry, Phil. It's just... I want Larry to come clean. I want him to live a life out in the open where he can enjoy other men.
I don't need to because I don't want to. mother. In any event, you know what? I'm going to ignore. I'm way above it.
That's all you can do. Yeah.
I'm way above it. So in any event, Phil, I was that's what happened, and
you since that time you've had no desire.
None whatsoever. None what I was married to a woman, and you can check that. And because sometimes when you say you're married, well, I know gay marriage is illegal, but some of the guys, I don't know. Yeah, but mother, see this left hand? It's seen it all. I married a woman, and we had daughters. Now, when Marcy left with the girls, it's because I got too heavy involved in the whole Clinton impeachment thing. And since that time, I've been very much involved in politics.
Okay, so you feel that you're fine there, huh?
I feel. What do you mean? Do I feel I'm fine there? God, yeah. Let me just check my pants and make sure that.
No, I'm just wondering. You know, since you got to understand something, Larry. It's not that it's terrible. It's not a horrible thing. It's just that when you say something, when you tell me something like that from your past. Okay.
What, you think I belong in a nut house now?
No, I didn't say that. I'm saying that if you tell me something like that from your past, it's a significant piece of information. That's all. It doesn't mean anything. It doesn't mean anything that you don't want it to mean. How about that? Okay?
That's what I've been trying to tell Mother. Excuse me. That's what I've been trying to tell Mother. And you want to... I want to tell you, don't you?
Don't lay a hand on her.
Oh, God, I want to. She just now, yeah, she's in the bathroom. She's got to take a shower. Did you hear how it tailed out there?
What?
Did you hear it tail out?
What do you mean, tail out?
She went, yay. That is her closer. Then she always leaves the room to do something else. So she's probably...
Boy, you cats. I thought I was...
What do you mean, you cats? Are you talking about me and Mother?
Yeah, I am.
Okay, could you please respectfully refer to my mother as Mother? She's not a cat.
Sorry, Larry. It's just that I was talking to Colleen Kristen Brewster and her brother Ben.
That nut? That guy Ben Brewster? I listen to that guy. That guy needs to be locked up, and he needs to be locked up and have the key thrown into a lake. Preferably the lake where that one mutant lives. You know, what's the name of that place? Crystal Lake? You know where the mutant lives, right?
Friday the 13th, yeah. Look, let's just move along here now, Larry. You were going to be on talking to me about something decidedly different, correct?
Yes, I was going to talk to you about the cave. Apparently there is a archaeologic find in southern France that I want to be a part of, and I'd like to tell your audience about it.
Okay, so we're going to be back here to talk with Larry Grover about something very non-political, even though we just talked about politics. And that is an archaeological dig, some kind of an archaeological trip that he wants to go on to France. And we will discuss that with him when we come back here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, 877-876-PHIL.
Truth is our bitch. The yeah. Phil Hendry Show.
World famous Phil Hendry Show here, 877-876-7445. As we're talking to Larry Grover from Conservatives of Kern County, but we're not going to talk politics tonight, although we got into a little bit of it there. And I to the extent, Larry, that I wasn't able to control that intercession there by your mother.
Well, you know, you have to understand, Phil, I think anybody needs to understand that, you know, when a man is not out morning, noon, and night, every night of the week, hunting up women to sleep with, that he is suspect in our society as being homosexual. And I am not.
Do you think so?
Do I think so? Yeah, I think so. Because I've devoted my time to helping our country, to investigating this President Clinton and then Obama, and some people may think it's partisan. Okay, fine, sure. But I've done it because I love my country and because I don't go out with every woman, because I don't chase down every skirt that I see. And because I have not been treated for a venereal disease each and every day of my life over the last 12 years, that somehow I'm a homosexual. Well, no, that's not the case. All right?
Okay, that's fine. And I believe you. And I think you're right. And I think that... But look, you know, there's plenty of guys that go through life and they're not considered gay or straight. They're just sort of their own men. Why do you think people fixate on your sexuality?
Well, I don't think anybody fixates on my sexuality. I'm just telling you. I've been out with women. I've dated women. I've had many dates. I happen to be very religious. So because I take a young lady out, and I am respectful of her, and I say to them that I will be irrespectful, and I don't try to get into their business, that makes me one of the gays. Well, no, sir, no, sir. So, you know, I have had the opportunity. For instance, I've got an opportunity to go on this archaeologic dig.
Now, tell me about this archaeologic dig.
I think it's going to be fascinating, Phil, because the news was just announced yesterday that at a place called Aubry-Castanet, and this is in southern France, there is a 1.5 metric ton slab of limestone with very, very early cave drawings, early man hunter-gatherer drawings. I don't know if this is Neolithic or Stone Age, but these are early drawings and carvings on this slab that they say, Phil, are 37,000 years old.
Wow.
And that makes them among some of the oldest in the world.
Now, I did not know that you had an interest in archaeology at all.
I don't, and... All right, Mother...
Let me talk to her for a minute.
Mr. Henry.
Yes, Phil?
You're running around yelling gay. It's just all it's doing is getting him angry.
Larry doesn't care about archaeology.
Mother, you're gonna blow it. You're gonna blow it, Mother. I'm just telling you right now, you are right now putting yourself at risk.
Larry!
Mr. Henry.
Yes.
Don't threaten her.
God!
Larry wants to go because he heard it was a carving of a woman's... No, Larry, I'm gonna say carving of a woman's genitalia.
Why would I... Okay, so you heard what Mother said.
Yeah.
Okay, why would I go all those thousands of miles to see a woman's genitalia?
I don't know. Why would you? That seems very strange. This is a 37,000-year-old carving of what?
It is a 37,000-year-old carving of a people that were known... that are known to archaeologists as the Aragnesian people, and it's a carving of a woman's sexual... organs.
Okay.
Why would I go third? I'm not going to go out just to see that. Unless, of course, I want to see it and I don't want to see pornography. That's the only reason. So...
All right, are you going over there to see it because it's a woman's sexual organs or not?
I'm going because it's a respectful rendering of a woman's sexual organs.
See what I mean, Phil? Larry is so hard up for a peek.
You're on the extension, aren't you?
Yes, I am, so you can't...
Phil, I'm going to go in and get the extension out of her hand.
No, Larry, please don't. Larry!
Give me the phone. All right.
Larry!
Are you done? She's done.
Sounded like it tailed out.
Yeah.
So you want to explain this?
Explain what?
You're going to go all the way to France so you can see a archaeologic rendering of a woman's genitalia because that's a respectful way.
Yes, because I'm not looking at it in some magazine, because it's not smut, because I'm not trying to get a kick, you know, trying to get the cheap kick. That's what I'm going to do.
Boy. Well, have yourself a good time then.
Mean have yourself a good time. What I'm trying to tell you...
Because that doesn't sound like anything that's any healthier, Larry, than going to the local newsstand and just buying yourself a magazine or better yet, going online and looking at some porn.
Why?
Because it sounds weird. Because you don't want to look at porn, and yet you want to get a look at a woman's naked form, so you go all the way to France to see a rock carving?
So now we know. Now you think I'm a freak, just like Mother does. I bet you think I'm a homosexual, too, don't you? I'm gonna kill her.
Larry.
Hold on. She locked herself in the room.
If I hear about that old lady getting smacked around by you, so help me God.
Well, what am I supposed to do, okay?
Just, Larry, you know what you could do is go to your office with your cell phone. Why do you always call me from your house?
I live here? Wow.
I know you live there, man, but every time you're talking to me...
Hey, man, what did I tell you about that beatnik stuff, man?
I know you live there, but every time you're talking to me, you're dealing with your mother.
Yeah. The point that I'm... Oh, God.
Yeah, we're out of time.
Thanks a lot.
It's not me, man.
Yeah, okay, man.
Good luck, Larry, and I hope you get yourself a nice cheap ticket to France so you can go and, hike to where the cave drawings are and take a look at a woman's naked form in a respectful way, in a respectful and archaeologic way. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show, Vernon Dozier coming up with a history lesson. We'll be right back on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, 877-876-PHIL.
Phil Hendry. Shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
Welcome back here on this Monday, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. 1 week from today, we're going to debut our brand-new Phil Hendry podcast. We call it the Free Phil Hendry Podcast, and it'll be available at philhendryradio.com, philhendryradio.com. And over on philhendryradio.com is also live streaming archive material. So if you are you're interested in getting a backstage pass, what's it all about? Check out some of our archive material. We've got some stuff streaming there from 2001. And point of fact, our archives go back over a decade. Thousands and thousands of hours of archive material at philhendryshow.com. So a backstage pass is what you're going to want to have. Plus, we have our video cast each and every night here, Phil TV in HD, and we're looking at the beautiful Pacific behind me right now. And next hour with Bud and Robert in our News and Information Hour, we'll tell you a little bit more about the beautiful El Pacifico today, man, because it was a windy day, and I'm in the middle of a diet, so I'm going out and I'm exercising on that beach. And when it's windy, not the easiest thing in the world to do. Joining us is Vernon Dozier tonight from Glendale, California, as we continue to talk about the series on kids, school, and respecting authority. And Vernon, you and I have talked a lot about young people. You're a teacher at a private school, but I know you've been a teacher at a public school. And authority and the respecting of authority has been under assault.
You know, I'd like to believe that it comes and goes. I think generationally things change. You see young people respecting authority, and some young people don't. But I've never seen a group of young people like the current generation who seem to be confused by the idea of not so much confused as if they do not respect or acknowledge, I should say, a certain kind of authority. For instance, adults. Young people know they have to respect their own parents. They know they have to respect their own teachers sometimes, but they don't even have, this generation of young people don't seem to have the kind of respect that my generation had, maybe yours too, with just any adult, you know, just give deference. And
respecting your elders?
Say that again?
Respecting one's elders?
Exactly. Remember, that was the phrase we heard, respect your elders.
And well, is it possible that we have a generation of young people now who have been taught, you know, respect is earned?
Well, you know, that's an interesting phrase, respect is earned, because when you're young, when you're a young person and you say to a young person, respect is earned, I think that what you should be referring to is the young person earning respect. Not saying to a young person, don't give them respect unless they earn it. Now, I know that there are many situations where we do not want our young people just giving over authority and power to people that are suspect, especially strangers in certain situations. But
that's different from school. And when you say adult, respecting an adult.
Let me tell you something that I saw television today. And, you know, I am a big believer in tradition. I know you're a history fan. I'm not so much a history fan as I am a tradition fan. And I want to tell you something that I saw today that I think our young people could use about 200% of, okay? I mean, I saw something today in a program that our young people could use a whole lot of. You know, they could use a healthy heaping. What is it they used to say on TV? Do you want a healthy heaping spoonful of it? Or that song, my baby loves, she gets a spoonful. I forget how it goes.
Oh, yeah, Love and Spoonful?
Love and Spoonful, yeah. That was an old blues song, right?
Yeah, that and was also the name of a group. But, yeah, that's the old blues song.
Right. I want to give you a spoonful of this. And here's something that our kids could use a whole healthy heaping, you know, a whole heaping hold of.
A healthy heaping spoonful of.
There you go. That's what I'm looking for. Sorry, Phil. A healthy heaping spoonful of. I saw on the television a man and a bunch of other men, but one man was standing there. And it looked, the film was very grainy. It looked like it might have been a lot older. And this was a bearded man, and he was dressed in ways I'd never seen people dress this way before, but I saw something. This man was walking along, and the other men were saluting him. They had their hands up to their foreheads and saluting him. Now, that's not all. When he kept on talking, when the man was talking and the other guys were talking to him, they kept saluting, so their hands were always at their forehead saluting.
Really? Well, so you're looking at an old film of what?
It looked to me as if it might have been the 1950s.
They were dressed how?
They were dressed...
It might have been Russia or so, Soviet Russia?
No, the guy had a beard.
Well, a beard would be a lot... Unless it's one of the old liners.
Yeah, it was... he was bearded, and his wife had a... I guess it was his wife. She had a big hat.
His wife had a big hat.
It might have been the 50s, it might have been the 40s.
A big hat. That sounds like the turn of the century.
Oh, yeah? I don't know.
Well, I mean, so everybody was saluting this guy. It would help to know who the guy was.
Well, I think he looked like he was a general or something, but there was a woman with him. She had a big-ass, excuse my language, a big-ass hat. But she also had a bunch of other kids with him, and they had big-ass hats, too. I'm sorry, Phil. I'm not the history. Excuse me. God, I had a. You know what I had? I had chicken ratatouille that Debbie made for me.
Okay, that. Yeah, but you know, belching.
I apologize, Phil.
You know, we're talking about kids earning respect.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I apologize.
All right.
So he had a bunch of kids with big hats. So I don't know what.
He had a bunch of kids with big hats. I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, is it important?
It's a little important just to know. You say that there was a guy being saluted.
Yes. Well, the thing that struck me about it was, as he was talking to this man, the man was talking to him, but the man kept the salute. He held the salute. Now, you've never seen that. I've never seen that. And the reason why I mentioning it, Phil, is, I can tell you, when I lie awake at night and I think about what's best for our young people, And I think about what can teach our young people how to be respectful of authority and how to be respectful I'll say it, be respectful of me. You know, I'm a teacher, and I have an authority issue. Sometimes the kids just, it's like I don't even exist. And it's like I can go in, I can talk to them about the class that day, and it's like I might as well be the invisible man, you know. I'll talk to this young lady, a new student. She's a transfer student from back east. Her name's Deborah, and I'll talk to her, and she stares right through me. And I could tell you something. She may be a teenage girl, and I don't mean anything by this, but, boy, that'll cut you. Man, I was thinking about it the other night, and I totally got out of the mood with my wife. And
all right, you know, you're talking about some stuff that I'm not comfortable with.
I'm sorry, Phil.
You're talking about some stuff I'm not comfortable with. You know what?
Well, I'm talking about authority.
Yeah, you're talking about authority, but some girl that was looking right through you.
Yeah, I was talking about how she's... If you ever had that happen to you, my friend, you would know.
I've had it happen to me. I don't know that it was... I'm not a teacher and certainly not a teenage girl, you know.
Well, don't go there. I hear where you're going. Don't go there. I'm talking about respect. I'm talking about teaching our young people respect. Like the guy I saw on TV today who was talking to this guy with a beard, and he was still saluting the guy. They might have been talking about the weather. They might have been talking about the ball game. But this guy held a salute. I've never seen a man hold a salute. And what I'm trying to say is our young people could use a healthy heaping heaven left. I'm trying to say it, and I can't.
You know, we've had a lot of people on the show lately that are having a hard time talking, you know?
I'm sorry?
I noticed that I've had a lot of people on the show that have a hard time talking.
I don't have a hard time talking, Mr. Henry. The saying is...
I can't even do it.
That's right, yeah. That's right.
A healthy heaping spoonful.
Okay. A healthy heaping spoonful of that right there, our young people.
Which is what?
Which is what? Which is holding a salute while your seniors are talking to you. And I have brought that to the attention of the board, and I was able to institute it today. And that's why I wanted to talk to you.
So you had today in your class young people talking to you and saluting?
No, I didn't have young. They were holding the salute. What I'm saying is this, Phil. When I brought them up to talk to me, or if they wanted to talk to me, I said, do you want to talk to me specifically? And they'd say yes. I'd say, then you better salute and hold the salute. And that's what they would do.
Okay. I want to find out how this helps gain the respect of our young people.
I can tell you.
All right, hold on. 877-876-7445 is the number here. We're talking with Vernon Dozier tonight on... young people on authority and how we can further inculcate into our young people authority, you know, respect for authority. And he's talking about having kids salute and hold the salute while they're talking to him. I don't know. We'll be right back. 877-876-7445. The world famous Phil Henry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Henry Show.
I just heard you laugh. Okay, so don't think you got to.
This is the world famous Phil Henry Show.
World famous Phil Henry Show, 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. Vernon Dozier joining us from Glendale tonight as we talk about young people, authority. Do they have respect for authority like they used to have? I would have to draw the conclusion from you, Vernon, that they don't.
I don't think so, Phil. I think we've got young people that are confused. I'm not blaming the young people. I think they're confused by the adults. I think the adults have given them different targets. They've said, well, respect them, don't respect them. You know, we've given kids, and I think maybe some people were well-intentioned, but I think we've given kids a choice as to who they respect and who they don't respect. And, you know, that can, that is, I don't think it's good for the young person. It's also not good for the adult. I mean, I want to be respected by young people. I don't want to have to show them my resume on whether I ought to be respected or not. I'm a teacher.
Well, that's true. You should be respected.
But even if I wasn't a teacher, even if I was just... I'll give you an example. If I were an indigent man and I was laying in the street, but I was older than the young people walking down the street, I would expect some respect from them.
Well, what kind of respect are you going to give an indigent man laying in the street?
You're going to, as I said to you, and this is where people don't get it, you're going to give some outward display, and that's why I said you hold a salute.
So you want young people saluting?
I want an outward display of respect. You know, some respect that I don't feel I get. I know there's a lot of adults who feel the same way I do, that they don't get any respect. And the TV show that I've seen today, where the guy was saluting as he had a conversation with this gentleman who had these kids with big hats. That, and I, forgive me again, Phil, I don't know that.
Well, I got to look and find out what that show was. 877-876-PHIL. Let's go to Hayes on the Phil Hendry Show. Hayes, go ahead. You're on here with Vernon Dozier.
Yes, sir, Mr. Vernon. First of all, yes, you know, you do reserve, you do deserve some respect as a teacher. You know, it's a, an admirable job, and it's a good thing that you do care. You know, a lot of teachers, I'm sure, don't even care where, whether the kids respect them or not. But I just got a comment. Holding a salute doesn't make a lot of sense. If you want some respect, I would recommend, you know, teaching the kids to show your respect by looking you in the eye, you know, listening to your to what you have to say and not interrupting or, you know, being defensive, and, you know, just letting you finish what you have to say and, you know, ask questions. But, you know, holding a salute sounds a little bit more like Nazi Germany or something like that.
Oh, no, 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 not at all, because the Nazi Germany is the whole Führer principle, which is, we're talking about young people, and see, everything you just said is good, but the kid needs to be focused. If I've got five different things I want a young person to do, I can mention all five of those, but I think if I tell him, I want you to salute and hold the salute, then it focuses all five of those things into that salute. Look me in the eye, don't give me any lip, you know, don't. Yeah, you know what I'm saying? And don't look at me like I'm the invisible man. Are you? Do you have kids, sir?
I do not, at least not yet.
All right. All right, well, someday when you do have, God willing, you have children, they're a great joy. But, boy, I'll tell you, on a day when they're looking right through you like you're the invisible man, boy, you just feel like you might as well just step right off onto a subway track because...
oh, God.
What?
Well, what kind of a... That's a little harsh, isn't it?
Well, let me... Harsh? You come home at night after breaking your rear end, and the kid's staring right through you like you're not, there's just air there. Hi, Dad's home. No, he isn't. It's air. It's just, you know, a pair of shoes might have walked in. That's what the kid
right.
sees. What do you, yeah, I can tell you're laughing, sir, and you can laugh if you want.
I'm not laughing.
Okay.
I am.
What are you laughing at?
The idea of a pair of shoes walking in with no with nobody in them.
See, Phil, I don't think it's right. What I saw on TV today.
This thing you saw on TV today, I'm trying to have a bearded guy. Are you talking about World War I?
It might have been, yes, sir.
All right, you might have been talking about the Tsar of Russia, if you're talking about young people with big hats.
All right.
Okay, the Tsar was a king. He was an emperor. He was more than a general. And when they talked to him and they held a salute, I don't know of any other military in the world that holds a salute for any individual other than one that has allegiance to a king.
Okay, well, all right, then that's what I'm talking about.
Well, that's ridiculous. The kids are supposed to look to adults like they're kings or queens?
What? I don't understand what's so bad about having a kid salute the very individual that is... going to keep him alive from one minute to the next, because a kid can't do it on his own, see? You know what I mean, sir? You can't, what's he going to do? Go out and earn, he's all of a sudden going to get an executive position somewhere and have a six-figure income and tell you to go ahead and pound sand, just go ahead and stick it right up there where the sun doesn't shine because he don't need you? I don't think so.
All right, Hayes, well, thank you for your call, sir.
All right, good luck with all that.
All right. Yeah, 877-876-PHIL.
But that guy, he didn't sound like he understood.
Well, I'm not sure that I do.
I can help you with it, Phil. So what I'm saying here...
Well, first of all, you said to me, and you said to our caller, that young people, you know, looking right through you like you're air...
I've had that experience. I'm telling you, I've walked into my classroom, and I've seen, because here's what happens, Phil, they hear you. They hear you, and the auditory olfactory, you know, the smell. Not well. I guess it is the sense of smell. I think what they do is they smell you first. That's really what happens. These kids smell you, and they smell something, because that's the oldest part of the brain. They don't see you because they're not. They don't care whether you are alive. They don't care whether you died. They don't care. That's the way kids are. But they'll smell something. And they'll look toward the door, and it's almost as if two shoes walked in, but there's no man in them. And I got to tell you.
Well.
It hurts. Now you're laughing.
When you said that they smell you.
Okay, you know what, Henry? Why don't you? I hope they find you. I don't hope your family's around you, around your bed when you die. I hope you're found.
Oh! They smell you first. They smell you first. So if you're a teacher and you come through the door, the kids are not going to notice you. They don't care whether you live or whether you died, but they will smell you. And they'll see two shoes. I'm sorry, Mr. Dozier, but I couldn't hold it back any longer. And I think the caller, the gentleman was aghast as well. So we are talking here about, Bud, if they call back, I'll talk to them when I want to talk to them. Do you understand? Good. I'm not going to... You keep throwing people on the air. You understand? Good. So, in other words, when we're talking about the... What did I just get done telling you?
I insisted that he put me back on the air.
No, hold on. What did I just get done telling you? Thank you. Thank you, Bud. All right, we're going to come back and we will have... We're going to come back. We'll have Vernon Dozier on with us in a moment. It's the Phil Henry Show.
I told him to.
Vernon Dozier with me here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show. Our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. As we talk about earning respect and...
I'm sorry, Phil.
Just we're talking about earning respect and authority. Now, you are in favor of having the kids salute and hold a salute.
I believe that that very small gesture is something that is learned in our military. And one that you just pointed out to me was the film that I saw was what film?
I believe you were looking at a World War One era film of the Tsar of Russia.
Well, whoever it was that was talking to that man had a salute. And even as he was talking to this Tsar of Russia, he was holding the salute as if he was saying, well, we got great weather today, but he's holding on. And the Tsar, guess what the Tsar did, Phil?
What?
He didn't have to salute. He didn't have to salute. That's my point. My point is, as adults, we should not, in a way, should be the Tsar of Russia to these kids because they need to have that kind of discipline.
All right, 877-876-7445. Let me go to our caller, Steve. Steve, go ahead. You're on the Phil Henry Show.
Yeah. To that gentleman that's calling in, I'm a school superintendent, and
yes, sir.
I'm going to tell you that if I was in your classroom, and if you're all over the page like you are in this conversation, that I'd have a hard time respecting anything you said. I'll tell you what the problem is: our kids don't. It's not modeled at home, and you know you talk about well. The kids need to earn it or don't, you know, they shouldn't have to feel that they earn it from adults. The problem is they've never seen it modeled. And as the leader in the classroom, when you're having interaction with other professionals in your building, that they see you not interrupting, having conversations with them and modeling the respect that you're looking for, and it's not a you're having to earn their respect, but they just don't
know.
They haven't seen it at home. They haven't seen it on
you.
Television. And
I just got done telling you what I saw on television today. This guy held a salute, and the other guy could have been...
It was 1920. It was 1920, and it was the Tsar of Russia. I mean...
Well, but still, I mean, what I'm saying to you, Steve, is that this Tsar, he could have been picking his nose, doing anything, and the other guy was still saluting. That's what I'm saying.
Well, because he was scared to death that he was going to have the king's army, the Tsar's army, come and chop his head off.
Well, I mean
there's
I don't know.
Respect. Respect out of fear is not respect. It's fear.
But, I mean, don't you think that in the way things are going nowadays, I mean, everything's just, you know, that we need to, we got to get something done here. I mean, otherwise, and all I'm saying is when I walk into the classroom and I teach in a private school, I teach in a private Christian school, and they look at me, like I said, I might as well be just a faint smell that came in from outdoors for all they care about me. You know.
Well,
let me jump in here, if I could, Steve and Vernon, because what Steve is saying seems to make a lot of sense to me. If the kids see you giving respect and if the kids see this kind of adult interaction, one thing I know about kids is they want to be adult. And so one of the things they want to do is they look at adults and they model us and they, wow, what gets them ahead and what doesn't? What's a cool way of being? I think this guy looks cool when he's respectful and when he's...
I mean, I could go into class and look. I, the way I am with other teachers, and Steve, you may be the same. You're a superintendent, and I would give you respect. Yeah, I would give you respect. I would, if you told me to hold a salute, I would. Now that may sound crazy.
Wait a minute. You'd salute this guy.
If he wanted me to, I would. And the kids would see that, and they'd say, "Look at Mr. Dozier. He's holding a salute there for Steve, the superintendent. Maybe I can get me some of that, you know, do that or whatever. I don't know."
The other thing, Vernon, is get me some of that.
Well, I lapse into some of my, you know,
colloquialism. Well, I mean, that's kind of my other thought. I mean, you're the leader of the classroom, Mr. Dozier, and...
Yes, sir.
I hate to be the one to point it out, but your grammar's kind of all over the page, too. And, I mean, I don't want to sound judgmental. And as a teacher, I would have to call you out on it. I mean,
what are
you're
you,
modeling.
But,
hey, I don't know where
we are
held to a different standard as educators, whether we like it or not, and we've got more things put on our page in the last 20 years because, for whatever reason, the parents aren't doing it, don't know how to do it, don't want to do it.
That's the truth. That's the truth.
You got that right. I know these parents. Some of these parents, I'd love to. I don't even want to say, but you know.
That we know it's a problem. We can't blame and throw rocks. We've got to do what we can.
Got to do the job. Yeah. Listen, Steve, outstanding.
Well, I just want to say, Steve, you're a good man. But I'll tell you, if I could get these kids to salute me, and I know it doesn't sound like much of a solution, but at least when they salute, they know they're staring at, oh, I got to salute that. They may think of me as an it. They may not even think of me as a man. But at least
they're doing something. Maybe start out when you're standing outside your classroom door, and when they walk in, and beautiful. And when they're walking in, you're greeting them and making sure they're aware that, you know, you're glad they're there. You know, Mr. Dozier knows my name. Mr. Dozier was...
I've done that.
Do you do
and
it every
called
day?
And not... Not I got a call to the administration for doing it because I commented on a girl's
Oh boy!
In this day and age, and I can, you know, there's a slip for whatever, but saying hello to a young lady and saying hello to a young man doesn't get you called to administration.
Well, that's what all that happened. I mean, I commented on something about her.
You commented on something about what?
That's not our job, though. A hello is different than a comment. and I would have probably called you up and said, "Hey, that's probably crossing the line."
How tight her skirt was?
Yes.
Yeah, that would have been a write-up, Mr. Dozier. I'll tell you.
Okay. So meanwhile, I get written up, and meanwhile, I get dragged in front of everybody. All I want them to do is know that there's something there besides a smell and a pair of shoes, and I get called. Oh boy.
Well, no, you can't.
First of all, I wouldn't do it in front of everybody. Only you and I would be aware of it.
Do you know what it's like, Steve? When you walk into a classroom and the kids are—they don't see you. They're going there. They're doing this. They're like dogs that suddenly smelled like male dogs that maybe smelled a female dog. That's about what I get. That's the respect that I get.
Well, listen, man. If you're commenting on a girl's skirt, and you want them to,
I was trying to be friendly.
But they don't need friends.
All right, Steve. Yeah, Steve. Thank you for your call, sir. And it sounds like you're a good leader of young people. I appreciate your call. That's Steve. He's a superintendent.
He's a superintendent and a leader of young people. And what am I, sir?
Vernon.
What am I, sir?
Vernon, we're.
What am I, sir? What do I do?
You're a teacher.
Is that it?
Wow. Oh, boy.
Well, I'm sorry.
I can tell you that hurts. Probably that doesn't mean anything to you, but it hurts.
Vernon, you talked about commenting on a girl's tight skirt. You're talking about wanting them to salute.
I saw it on a movie with a guy and with kids with big hats.
You saw it on a movie with a guy with kids with big hats.
There you are laughing at me again.
Every time I've had you on lately, by the way, you've been this close to a freaking nervous breakdown.
Well, that's because of the world that I'm living in right now, my man, and that's because of the profession that I've got as a teacher, which is about as thankless a job. I'm going to tell you something, Mr. Henry.
All I was saying...
No, you hold on for just a minute now. I heard your speech, and I listened to Steve. Good for you. Both of you guys, brownie points. Ding, ding. See the Padre on the way out. He'll punch your ticket for you. But now I want to say something. There's only one job that is more menial than that of being a teacher, and that's the guy. And if you saw that movie, Woodstock, they showed you graphically... The guy that changes the toilet paper in an outhouse. Did you see that man? And he was smiling.
Yeah, I saw. In fact, that man was a study in dignity and sweetness. And
what are you talking about?
The guy in that Woodstock, it's an old, old movie. Some of you guys have probably heard of Woodstock. But in the movie Woodstock, in one part of the movie.
What are you going to give a speech? I'm trying to tell you.
Hold on for a minute. In one, because I think this is an I'm glad you brought that guy up. In one part of the movie. Is this man who is replacing the toilet paper in an outhouse, and he's about old enough to be the father of the kids that are at this concert, and he even says, I think my kids are at this concert, and he was appreciative of it, and he was saying that he was replacing the toilet paper to make it a more pleasant experience for the kids, and there wasn't an ounce of bitterness or anger or hostility in him at all. He was a very humble guy.
So you're trying to tell me something here. And
what I'm trying to tell you is that man's job in life was to replace the toilet paper in an outhouse, and yet he did it with a smile, with dignity, with a bit of humor. He seemed to have some love in him, too. I mean, he was a example of a quality human being.
Oh, boy, if I've heard a load of bull crap now. I'll tell you, Phil, I swear that was as full of crap as that outhouse that guy was trying to change the plunger paper. Oh, man, I've heard it all now.
You've heard it all, huh?
Yeah, I've heard it all now, okay? You're trying to tell me...
Did you hear what I said?
You're trying to tell me that some guy changing the outhouse paper has got it over me?
No, I didn't say that at all. I said that when you say a more menial job, there are aspects even to that job of changing the toilet paper in an outhouse that enables a person to show their humanity. So whether a teacher is above that or below it, so what?
So what?
You didn't get into the teaching profession, man, to be the Tsar of Russia. You didn't get into being a teacher to be anybody's king or god or lord. You got into it to teach.
What if I told you I got into it to get some respect in this world? to get...
Oh, hold on for a minute, okay? Because it's getting to... You're not hearing a word I'm saying. 877-876-7445. Thank you, Vernon, for bringing up the Woodstock movie. Maybe you've seen it, maybe you haven't. Like I said, it's an old movie about the concert that took place, but there's a guy changing the outhouse toilet paper, and he is, for all the world, the most dignified guy, and he's actually enjoying the fact that he's doing it for young people, and...
Well, maybe the guy's a perv.
Get out of here. 877-876-7445. World famous Phil Hendry Show. Be right back.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
You're the guy that was watching. Welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, 877-876-PHIL. And Vernon Dozier joining us here as we talk about respect and about holding a salute. And
we're not just talking about that, Phil. We're talking about the overall of young people in school and respecting your elders. And, I can't believe that you found such a comedy. It's like a comedy sketch comedy routine that you think you're engaged in here.
No, but when you say things like you walked into the class and the kids, they don't see you. You just see them starting to sniff the air.
I'm telling you that has happened to me on more than one occasion. I walk into the classroom and the kids don't see me. They look up and just like they're, I can't explain it. It's like a female dog in heat. And
yeah, okay. Hey, I really don't want to talk about that.
Well, what are you all uncomfortable about talking about the sex? You know, the sexes?
Sex? No, I don't want to talk about dogs and being in heat. That's what I don't want to talk about.
Well, that's sex.
That's dogs being in heat? Wow.
Okay, you're making it sound like that's how I get my kicks.
No, you are. 877-876-PHIL. Here is Ron. Go ahead, Ron. You're on the Phil Hendry Show. And by the way, we have our News and Information Hour coming up, folks, in just a moment. Go ahead, Ron.
Oh, hi, Ron. Hi, Phil. This is Dr. Tarter.
Hey, Dr. Tarter, how are you doing?
Well, I'm doing well. I'm an educator, and I have been an educator for a long time, and as well as working at a... as well as working about Meadow, I'm an astronomer. I'm speaking to your guest. Your name is Vernon?
Yeah, Vernon Dozier.
Yes, Vernon. Well, I have, as I said...
I heard you the first time. You said you...
Don't be rude, okay?
Oh, no, it's all right, Phil.
Not being rude. He already said he's an astronomer. So that means you've got a doctorate?
Yes, sir, I do. But what I'm trying to say to you is I don't know that having young people salute you... is the answer
that you're the second? You're about the 15th person. You're the second or the 15th person to say second or the 15th person. I'm not saying that right.
What are you trying to say?
He's the second or the 15th person. I'm inflecting wrong.
You're saying that you've heard it before.
Yes, sir. I've heard it before. People have said that saluting is not necessarily going to give you respect. I understand that. But when you walk into a room...
I wanted to address the what you were saying about the young people smell you, they don't see you. You say, because I can tell you, I've had the same problem in my line of work, and Phil knows, and I think that a lot of his audience probably knows, that I have a competition with Dr. Stephen Hawking.
Yeah.
And I have been at many a function, a seminar, I've been at a symposium, where I'm about to give a paper, and Dr. Hawking rolls in. He doesn't walk in. He doesn't stride in. He rolls in.
I know, because Hawking's in isn't he in a hover-around?
Well, I don't know if it's a hover-around, but...
He's in a wheelchair.
Yeah, well, that's more than a wheelchair.
Well, thank you. You said a mouthful there. You better believe it's more than a wheelchair. And
I've seen that. This thing's more than a wheelchair, that's for sure.
Okay, so...
In any event... I know what it feels like to be just a smell, because on several occasions, as I've approached the dais to give a paper, I have seen people's noses go up in the air. Do they smell something? Do they not? And then it's Hawking. okay? So understand that it's not always a personal thing. And
wait, what are you saying now?
What do you mean, what am I saying now? I've been saying this since I called in. And that is...
Are you saying that they smell hawking?
Yes. Oh, yes. I'm saying I'm there giving a paper, I'm giving a dissertation, the noses go up as if I'm not there, just as you were saying, and they can smell something, just as you were saying, only what they smell isn't me. Hawking has just rolled in. So what I was going to say to you is there anything, when you've noticed this among your students, how do you know it's you?
I know it's me, sir, because I'm the... Stephen Hawking sure didn't roll in the door.
So there's no...
By the way, what is... I hear kids and stuff. Where are you?
I'm in a restaurant. The kids are in your...
That's right. I'm in the mall.
Where are you?
Who are you speaking with?
I'm talking to you, Vernon.
I'm in the mall.
Oh, okay. So that's very interesting, Dr. Tarner. So Stephen Hawking emits a smell.
No, I didn't say that. I'm just saying that I've seen the noses go up and that people turn in their seats.
Well, what does Hawking have? Excuse me for asking this, but what does he smell like? Because that, in order for them to...
what does he smell? Well, I know it's not me.
How do you know it's not you?
Let's see. I took a shot.
Are you laughing?
Well, yes, sir. I mean, I took a shower.
That's not the kind of olfactory experience here that Vernon is talking about. He's saying that it's almost a primal or an animal thing. They don't see you, they just smell you. Now, are you saying that that's what happens with Hawking?
Oh, I don't know if it's that. I think it's this Hawking just reeks. I mean,
that's different, sir. I don't reek. I take showers just as you do.
All right, well, and I do too.
You just said so. What kind of soap do you use?
I use Irish Spring, if it's any of your business.
That amazes me that they can't smell you. I mean, you might as well wipe down with cow dung.
You're not an Irish Spring.
Both of you guys can rot in hell.
Sorry.
Is that your fault?
No, it is my fault. News and Information Hour coming up next.
Are you done with Bing?
Yes.
Phil Hendry. Shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
World famous Phil Hendry Show, every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, the news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. And we certainly thank Dr. Ron Turner for calling in and checking in with us on the whole question of whether kids actually see their teachers or do they just smell them? And is that giving due respect, just sticking your nose in the air and sniffing the air as if, wow, I guess the teacher's here? Our number, 877-876-7445. It's our News and Information Hour with Bud Dickman and Robert Leonard. How you guys doing?
Doing pretty good. Looking at the Venturist Raceway and everything.
Yeah. What are you guys looking at that for?
Just see who won the midget.
Yeah, we want to find out who won the quad, too.
Yeah, they got a guy with no arms and no legs.
That's not what a quad is. The quad is the four-wheelers, man. Didn't you hear what Dan was talking about?
What are you talking about, four-wheelers?
Yeah, they have a quad. It's the quad.
No, it ain't. You mean a cat that can't move his arms or his legs?
Yeah.
No, you guys are morons again. Let's kick off another hour with how dumb is I?
You're dumb.
Listen, you idiot. A quad is a four-wheeler. If you're talking about these dirt track races?
Yeah.
That's what it is. A guy that can't move his arms.
Man, I think there's something wrong with you tonight.
Yeah, all you've been doing is laughing like you're slap happy.
I am slap happy, Jack. Let me tell you what, I'm so slap happy, I think I'm missing my calorie count by a couple thousand. You know, I've been on this diet, which is a 2,000 calories a day diet, and I'll tell you what, if you don't spread your meals out properly, if you load up, say, early in the day, by the end of the day, man, I got low blood sugar here. I'm not seeing things too clearly.
How much you weigh now?
Well, let's just put it this way, man. I'm at 259. I'm at 259. I'm 3 pounds. Well, I guess that's not bad, you know.
What?
I'm 3 pounds behind what I thought I would be.
Did you eat like a cruller or something?
Yeah. If you're eating pepperoni.
I'm going to bunch you. Bud, you're doing that on purpose. Now you're making me laugh.
Are you?
Shut up if I'm eating pepperoni. First of all, I am sticking to the diet. No, I'm not going over my calories. So I think what's happened is my metabolism is changing. The weight loss slows down. Dan Northcraft and you know, Dan's wife, she's like a total nutrition freak. And so she passed along some tips for me, like don't drink Diet Coke. And, oh, yeah, cut all of the Krispy Kreme out of your diet. No, I'm kidding. I wasn't eating Krispy Kreme.
No, man, you don't put. I'd love to go get a box of that.
You want
to
go? Let's go get some Krispy Kreme.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to be leaving now.
No, you're not leaving and going anywhere.
I'm only kidding.
Krispy Kreme. Let me tell you something. When I get down to my target weight, there'll be room in it for Krispy Kreme for Phil. Don't worry about it.
There'll be room in the box for you.
In any event, so yeah, and this is that 2,000 calories a day that I've been telling you guys about, and you got to be really faithful to it, and don't do what I do, which is, you know, load up all early in the day, like. And then by the end of your 24-hour cycle there, wow, I need some calories. So that's kind of what's happened to me here, I think. But the other thing is I've stopped with the Diet Coke, so that's gone. Forget it, man. No more Diet Coke.
What's wrong with that, man? It's Diet Coke.
Yeah, it's on account of because it's diet.
Doesn't matter. There's something in that Diet Coke that's god-awful. I don't know what it is. By the way, if Diet Coke is a sponsor, which I don't think they are. I'm only kidding. No, I think that what the hell is that stuff, Dan? You said Aspermonte? That's either. I thought that was a third baseman for the Cleveland Indians.
No, you're talking about Ken Aspermonte.
That's right, Ken Aspartame. Aspartame ain't no good, man. And Diet Coke is the thing of the past. Now, you know, the question was asked, Phil, can you survive without your Diet Coke? Yeah, I can. I mean, I'm good. Don't take my caffeine. Don't take my coffee away, you know?
Yeah. Coffee can't be fattening.
No way coffee's fattening. And I drink it black, and I drink it without sugar. So, you know, don't take my caffeine away with my coffee, and I'll live, man. I'll live to fight another day. But if you do, then I don't know what I'm going to do. But I don't need the Diet Coke. So that stuff's gone. Number two on the hit parade was I was loading up on too much of that protein powder. So you only need one scoop of that protein powder a day.
What were you doing?
Oh, I was probably doing about 3 or 4 or 5 scoops a day. I was having those protein shakes, but I was keeping it under the 2,000 calorie thing, see? So I'm only doing like one scoop of protein powder a day.
Then you'll insert a banana, right?
Yeah.
I didn't do nothing.
Yeah, you did. I saw you looking at him.
What?
He's looking at you, and he's saying, you'll insert a banana, huh? Yeah. Maybe a banana, maybe some strawberries, something like that. But all of that, so the protein powder, so that leaves me with other choices, which are basically vegetables. And I do a lot of salads, man. I can't tell you the salads that I've been eating lately. Woo! A lot of salads, a lot of veggies, a lot of fruit. Man, I love strawberries. I'm eating those blueberries like a maniac. And bananas and stuff like that.
What about like an apple or something like that? You all love an apple.
You know, I dig apples, but they're really high in calories. I mean, they are. You got to make. This is what I mean about choices. You got to be smart. Okay, well, do I really want to burn up 300 calories on this, or do I want to, you know, do it on that? What do I want to do? So that's what I've been doing, and it's really a challenge now, man. So now I'm down 30 pounds, and I'm by this point, let me see. By this point, I was expecting to be at 256. I'm at 259. So, you know, that's nothing that I'm doing. Like I said, the weight loss slows down. But if you guys, I know there's a lot of fat guys listening, and believe me, I feel your pain, man. If you want to lose weight, if you're happy being fat, that's great. But not me. I couldn't, you know, I didn't dig it, you know.
Yeah, it's tough to get laid.
It's tough to get. Will you shut up? So Why don't you just...
That's rude. Yeah, don't say that.
You're doing it all the time.
No, I'm not.
Shut up, both of you. So in any event, I can tell you it's a challenge, but it works. It works, man. It works. You know, it ain't easy. It ain't Jenny Craig. It ain't none of that. It's a bitch and a half. It's just, it's what I forced myself to do because I was so sick and tired of trying all this other stuff, you know.
What other stuff did you try?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, like I did the Lose It thing, and then I tried to do Weight Watchers for a while, and then I tried to, I did some other diet where I was talking to a nutritionist every so often, and, you know, and they were giving you these meals. None of that stuff was working for me, man. And
but I had Cortislim.
I ain't using Cortislim no more, okay? So I just finally went, I don't know what to do. I mean, I know one thing. When I went to see the doc, he said 1,500 calories a day. But I wouldn't recommend that for you, Phil. But he did do is he put this bug in my head. I can limit my calories per day to about 2,000. And that's what I decided to do. So there you go. Anyway, the reason why I'm bringing all of this garbage up is because today was a really interesting day. It's a Monday, and as I said, I didn't really spread my calories out, so I was feeling kind of toward showtime. I was really feeling it. But when I went out on the beach today, because I was going to do about a half an hour of running, and, you know, it was windy as hell, and there's nothing tougher, I think, there's plenty of things tougher in life, but it's pretty tough to...
It's probably the toughest thing you've ever done.
No, it ain't, bud. That's my point. But when you're running in sand and it's really, really windy, it's, you know, it can be tough. So there I was running in this sand, and there were about five or six of these... are they called parasurfers?
About a parasail.
It ain't a parasail because they're not up in the air. And I thought the guys that are up in the air are parasailing.
Where, these guys are down on the land?
They were on the ocean, man. They were on, surfboards or bodyboards or whatever you want to call them. Like windsurfing boards only they had. So I guess it's like parasurfing. But there must have been five or six guys out there today because it was perfect conditions for that. And these dudes were just, whew, man, they were whipping all through that water. And it looks like a lot of fun, but as I turned at the jetty and I was on my way back, I see this cat, his parasail or his chute is down in the water, and he's holding on to this thing. If you can imagine a guy who's hanging on to a large para-type chute or sail, it's picking up the wind.
Yeah, he's like trying to hold it back.
He was trying to hold it. I wasn't sure what he was trying to do, but he was leaning, and this thing is down in the water. He might have been trying to get it up in the air. So as I walked by, I looked at this thing. It was filling with water. And I looked back at the guy and I said, do you need some help? Like I was going to go over and maybe push it. And he said, no, I think I got it. Thanks. And at that instant, the thing went up in the air. And this guy is holding this thing, man, with all of this wind, this crazy-ass wind out on the beach today. This guy is standing there with his arms holding this para-type sail, or it's not a chute, it's a paratype sail, and I'm thinking, this cat's upper body strength.
Yeah, those guys got a whole, it takes a lot.
I mean, I'm thinking, this guy's upper body strength must be incredible. This cat's, I'm fine, man, because he's still got to get on his board and then get out there into the water. So there's probably some technique to it that I wasn't familiar with, but still in all, I ain't going to take nothing away from the guy. That's got to take some upper body strength to do that.
Well, I'm thinking about doing that.
No way, man. No way.
Yeah, if you did it, you don't know, but if the wind caught it, you'd fly maybe a long way away or something, you know?
Well, then you're going to fly that far away.
You don't know.
What do you mean I'm going to fly a long way away?
If the wind, on account of you don't have the upper body strength, well, I mean not now.
Yeah, but it ain't like it's going to pick him up and fly him to China or something.
Not much. I didn't say to China.
Well, what do you think it's going to do, bud?
Well, if you did it and you didn't have enough of the upper strength, it'd pick you up and take you way out.
Well, yeah, but that ain't like I'm going to take the guy. But it's going to take him.
It could take him way over to the island.
I ain't going to get blown all the way over to the Channel Islands? Are you nuts? I ain't that weak, okay?
Yeah, well, I don't know.
Don't worry about it. I'm not even going to try that, man. I'm so far away from doing that. You must be nuts. Maybe once I get down into some kind of athletic weight level. You know, right now, man, I'm still way too heavy. If I get my weight down to a level where it's, you know, gee, maybe Phil could actually compete in some sort of an athletic event. Not even an event. Just do something athletic. It ain't going to be that.
What's going to be?
I mean, I'll go surfing before I try doing that.
That's what I mean. It would suck you up.
It ain't going to suck me up into nothing, man. I mean, I'm just telling you, it's a little too much for me. All right, we'll be right back. We've been wasting time with this. I might get blown over to the Channel Islands. We'll be right back here, world-famous Phil Hendry Show. It is our news and information hour here with Bud and Robert and me.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
Here's the world famous Phil Hendry Show. I will tell you one thing, though. Thank God for the sun, man. I mean, I can't take that socked in fog crap because I'm just, you know, you want to blow your brains out, man.
Yeah, well, let's get that June gloom.
Oh, you can take that June gloom and park it. I'm so sick and tired. You folks that live anywhere other than here, consider yourself lucky because I'm telling you, we get this thing called June gloom. The whole month of June, it's like you're in the month of January. It's dark and it's cold and it sucks. Only here, at this particular point on the coast, it starts earlier. Although today was really nice. All right. This is what we were trying to get into here when we were talking to earlier with Larry Grover. A 1.5 metric ton slab of limestone found at the Aubry Castanet site in southwestern France is speckled with tool marks and carvings, including one of female genitalia that could be the oldest wall art ever discovered. They're saying this is the oldest porn, and that was a way of getting people interested in reading the story, so kudos to the headline writers, but... in point of fact, what makes it more significant, it's the oldest wall art. Now, I believe it's a carving, which is different from a painting, as you know, but it's significant in the sense of history, because there are rock carvings, and there are rock paintings, and I believe this carving obviously predates the painting. I suppose it makes sense.
Yeah, you got to carve in and stuff for your paint on everything.
Then what kind of paint they had back then?
They had no paint. They had to make it out of stuff.
Right. I don't know what they used. They used some, obviously, dyes derived from vegetables or fruits or something like that.
What'd that say?
They got it out of a fruit.
Who?
Will you shut up and quit trying to be funny? In the journal Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, who... in the journal Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences on Monday, a team of American and French anthropologists say the carvings on the slab, which once formed part of the roof of a rock outcropping that ancient humans used for shelter, appear to have been created about 37,000 years ago. Now, that's a long-ass time ago. And I believe it certainly goes back into... I don't know when the Ice Age started... It might even be before the last ice age. One of the two most identifiable carvings depicts what looks like a female, part of the female anatomy, female sex organs. The other shows the front half of an animal, possibly a bison, according to the paper. The carvings were made by people belonging to a culture that researchers call the Argonatians.
They must have been all about having sex and everything.
Yeah, sure, that's it, bud.
But why else they gonna put that on there?
I don't know. Why don't we, you know, look at us. Look at this culture. Are we all about having sex?
Yeah.
Stupid question. Anyway, the carvings were made by people belonging to a culture called the Aragonatians, which existed between 45,000 and 28,000 years ago. Early Aragonatian humans had complex social identities, and they expressed themselves in relatively modern ways through personal ornaments, sculpture, and graphic arts, according to lead author and New York University anthropologist Randall White. The carvings on the ceiling weren't made by anything akin to modern engraving techniques, but rather by someone's pecking at the stone with a chisel-like tool. You imagine this? The guy spent probably months carving a woman's, you know, it basically it's a woman's vagina, folks. Carving this into the rock, you know.
Well, I can't think of too many things that you spend all that time carving.
Yeah, unless you're carving into it.
Get up.
Ow.
Yeah.
Man, I tell you what, I like to tear me into...
You guys shut up or I'm going to throw you out of here. The carvings on the ceiling weren't made by anything akin to modern engraving. He or she should have been able to reach up and touch the ceiling, which scientists have determined was only about 2 meters. That would be 6.5 feet off the floor. He or she should have been able... Why do they think they'd be able to reach up and touch the ceiling?
Why?
Because people back then were, like, small compared to us. I mean, that guy that they found up there in the Alps, you remember that guy?
Oh, yeah, that one guy that, it was frozen.
Yeah, that guy is like 3,000 years old or something. That guy was only like 5'6" or 5'7".
What are you saying? Everybody back then was midget?
I didn't say that, did I? I'm saying they were smaller, they were shorter than the average height of a human being today. If you guys had ever go to a museum, which I know you don't even know what one of those is, but in these buildings, they have old stuff.
Now you know what a museum is. I went one time and seen a dinosaur egg.
Oh, a dinosaur egg. Yay.
Let's go, man.
You're the same way. You ain't been in one.
Not lately.
Not lately. Anyway, you can see clothing from 500, 600 years ago, and you can see the small size of the clothing. Okay, so...
You say Napoleon, or whatever that guy's name, Napoleon?
Yeah, Napoleon.
Napoleon. Napoleon. Yeah, he was a short guy, but he was a short... in stature, even for his time, he was considered a short man. To peg the engravings to a certain time period, the scientists performed radiocarbon dating on animal bones that were found beneath the rock. Because there was very little sediment accumulated between the underside of the block and the surface where the bones were found, the researchers think that very little time passed between when the figures were engraved and when the ceiling collapsed. Meaning they've, you know... They're guessing. Anyway, the carvings on the limestone ceiling of the shelter appear to be older than the famous paintings in Grotto Chauvet, the subject of the documentary Cave of the Forgotten Dreams. Now, this is a... You guys know what that is? I was watching that documentary one night. You guys weren't with me, huh? Those are the paintings of the... They're very famous paintings of, like, herds of buffalo and...
I've seen them.
Yeah, they're herds of antelope and stuff, and they're running. And those were painted... And they figure those were painted by humans 20,000 years ago, something like that. And that they might be religious in nature. Okay, so there you go, man.
So the oldest piece of art that any guy ever made is of a lady.
Yeah, man, I'll tell you, some things never change.
Something, yeah. We're not in a position to argue with 100% statistical certainty that Castanet is older. However, they think maybe it was. It was first discovered in World War I, but they haven't really analyzed it until now. And the only reason why we're talking about it is because it's a carving of a woman's vagina, the oldest rock art in history. Yay. We'll be right back. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show, different things that marijuana can cure. Next. Phil Hendry Show, and there's a whole thing happening with J.P. Morgan that you probably have been reading about, that Jamie Dimon, the CEO, as the CEO of J.P. Morgan, they essentially just dropped a couple of billion in losses, J.P. Morgan Chase & Company and their big trading losses, $2 billion. And... this is a guy who, by the way, feels empowered to say, well, you know, let's quit regulating Wall Street. And he might be right. He might be right. Maybe the over-regulation of Wall Street is not a good thing. But doesn't seem like the guy to be. Yeah, look at Mr. Dimon, whatever, you know, you ain't. What's the old saying? You know, the Marines want a few good men. Unfortunately, you ain't it. And you ain't it, man. Okay? So what we're trying to say here is whatever Wall Street needs or doesn't need, one of the things we got to get rid of are all you creeps, because you cats don't know your ass from a hole in the ground, and putting money in your hands might as well throw it down a rat hole. We don't need incompetent guys like you, and don't tell me about how regulations fouled you up. $2 billion worth? Buddy, I don't know what you ought to be doing for a living, but whatever it is, it ain't what you were doing. And they're talking about MF Global's implosion and Goldman Sachs. Yeah, all of these things are all well and good. I will tell you this. You can't regulate, you cannot regulate morality, as people like to say, any more than you can regulate brains. See, that's one thing nobody says anything about. People will say, oh, you can't regulate morality, which is correct. You can't. You can't regulate brains either. You can't pass a law that makes a guy smarter than he already is. So Wall Street is a classic example of that hypothesis. Go ahead and pass all the regulations you want, but if you're still working with a bunch of imbeciles, that's what you're working with. And I may be the only guy saying this, but I'll say it loud and I'll say it proud. I don't give a damn if they're working on Wall Street. Doesn't mean they got 5 cents worth of brains. Doesn't mean they know what they're doing. It could mean that they are psychopathic enough to have worked their way up the ladder of power there. It could mean that they have married the boss's daughter. It could mean that they got lucky in a couple of deals, and now somebody's giving them the keys to the village. It could mean a lot. It doesn't mean anything having to do with this guy knows what he's doing, because God knows we've had a million examples of guys that don't. So pass all the regulations you want, but you're not going to make people smarter. And that's the problem. In America, we believe that when you leave the private sector alone, the cream eventually rises to the top. What have we defined as cream? We've defined as cream the ability to make money. We have not defined as cream the ability to create quality, lasting, inventive product materials and so forth. We have not. That is not the definition of excellence in America. That's not the definition. The definition of excellence in America is make the most money. So therefore, when President Obama says, and just forget it's Obama saying this, because what he's saying is true. What he's saying essentially is true. He's saying that getting rid of unions. And I'm just listening to this, folks, because I am not an arch liberal. I'm just telling you that this is a reality. Getting rid of unions and laying off a bunch of people and downsizing to create profit and wealth, that's not necessarily good for the economy. He's right. You know, it's not necessarily good for the economy. It's good for the bottom line, and it's good for some stockholders, and it's good. But workers, there's millions of them. Stockholders? Well, there may be millions of stockholders, but I guarantee you one thing. There's a hell of a lot more workers. There's a hell of a lot more people out there that are pulling a paycheck instead of just, you know, cashing a dividend check. So, you know, you call it whatever you want, but if you continue to do business where as long as we're making a profit, we're doing good, Jack, you ain't going to be making nothing. You don't make anything. I mean, what was Detroit making at the bitter end? They weren't making anything other than they were just losing money. They're making trucks and losing money. What's my industry? Radio. You know, people say, well, you shouldn't be talking about your own industry, Phil. My industry is a classic example of this. Layoff, union bust, tax dodge, you got the radio business. That's how they have scored a profit in recent years. It's not nice for me to say that, but it happens to be the truth. And I'm telling you right now, they've invested precious little in product. In fact, if they've invested any at all. So
you're going to talk about marijuana.
What?
You said you were going to talk about marijuana.
Well, I'm talking about this. Don't tell me what to talk about.
Yeah, we already know about J.P. Morgan and everything like that.
Yeah, you wouldn't know J.P. Morgan from Harry Morgan, so don't worry about it.
Harry Morgan, a guy on Mass.
Right. I guess you do.
Yeah.
Marijuana may ease multiple sclerosis symptoms. People with multiple sclerosis have long said that smoking marijuana helps ease their painful muscle cramping, and a new clinical trial suggests they're not just blowing smoke. The study published Monday found that for 30 MS patients with muscular spasticity,
sorry,
a few days of marijuana smoking brought some relief. But the big caveat, researchers say, is that it's not clear that the downsides of pot smoking are worth it. Yeah, sure. We must say that. Some people with MS are already using medical marijuana to treat certain symptoms, including spasticity, when the muscles in the legs or arms contract painfully in something akin to a Charlie horse. Oh, God, those poor people. There is some science behind the idea the body naturally produces cannabinoids. Cannabinoids. Oh, wow, that's...
Yeah, I think that's from marijuana.
Yeah, cannabinoids, the group of chemicals found in marijuana. So the body naturally produces that anyway. I guess we'd have to just turn ourselves in at the border, huh? Anyway, the group of chemicals found in marijuana, and studies have suggested the cannabinoid receptors on our cells help regulate muscle spasticity. Spasticity. But the evidence that pot smoking actually helps with spasticity has been anecdotal. That means people are reporting that that's what it does. It doesn't mean that they've got scientific... they have not yet been able to prove this in a laboratory, as it were. We've heard from patients that marijuana helps their spasticity, but I think a lot of us thought, well, it's probably just making you feel good, said Dr. Jody Corey Bloom, the lead researcher on the new study. I think the study shows that, yes, marijuana may help with spasticity, but at a cost, said Corey Bloom of the University of California, San Diego. And what cost is that, and what scientific evidence do you have of that, Dr. Corey Bloom? Because you don't have any scientific evidence of it helping with the spasticity. That's all anecdotal. Maybe the whole idea that marijuana is bad for you, maybe that's anecdotal, too. What do you think?
But what are you trying to say?
What I'm trying to say is, if they ain't got science on the one side, maybe they ain't got any science on the other. The cost her team found is that smoking caused fatigue and dizziness in some users and generally slowed down people's mental skills soon after they used marijuana. But it's not clear if that would have any long-term consequences, Corey Bloom said.
What Corey Haim say?
Get out of here. What did Corey Haim say? About 400,000 people in the United States have MS, a chronic disease in which the protective coating around nerve fiber starts breaking down. The new study, reported in the Canadian Medical Association Journal, where they grow a lot of pot, included 30 MS patients with muscle spasticity. Well, what I would suggest, if you do have MS, you probably already smoke weed. So what the hell am I, you know?
Yeah, let people know in case they do get it.
Yeah, if you come down with it.
Okay, if you come down with MS, start smoking a whole bunch of weed. That'll probably help. Oh, that's got to be tough, man. That's got to be rough. All right, so we want to remind you, first and foremost, of course, we are online at philhenryshow.com, philhenryshow.com. That's where you could get a backstage pass and listen to our live and listen and watch our video cast and listen, of course, to our podcast of the show each and every day after the show ends. You can also listen to thousands of hours of archived material online at philhenryshow.com. You can also access our news feed. You can also access the comment section there. You can also access a multitude of other media, video and audio that we have up there for you, other podcasts and video casts that we have done. So check it out. And if you'd like to get an example, a free sample of the live archive of the archives that we have at philhenryshow.com, go over to philhenryradio.com and listen right now. There is, what do we got, Robert?
Well, we got 3 hours of archive from the Phil Henry Show archive on philhenryradio.com. And then next week,
that's a podcast.
Yeah, next week's a podcast.
Right. Next Monday, we will roll out our podcast that you can access there at philhenryradio.com. So we're all very excited about it, and we hope that you'll join us over there. What, bud?
Yeah, talk about how it went down today.
Oh, great. I wasn't going to bring that up.
Well, it did.
Yeah, okay. So there was a power outage. Anyway, we had a slight interruption over there at philhenryradio.com. Everything's back, up and running. It's a beautiful thing. We'll be right back with our final segment here on the show. In our news and information hour, marriage vows won't affect insurance. I don't want to talk about gay marriage.
Why, are you homophobic?
No, I'm not homophobic. I'm just tired of talking about it, if you don't mind. Here's a New York man challenging his wife for her seat.
What's that?
I mean, excuse me, her assembly seat. We'll be right back. Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry Show, every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast. And we thank this evening Vernon Dozier for joining us. And we also thank early on, whoever the hell we had, I forget. I can't remember our guests from one night to the next.
I'll look at the sheet.
Yeah, you do that. In any event, I think it was, well, it was Vernon and we had somebody else. All right, so, and I think Dr. Ron Tarner joined us tonight. So, what was your question, Bud?
Why do they call it a Charlie horse?
Why do they call it a Charlie horse? I don't know.
They probably named it after a guy named Charlie.
Yeah, that makes sense, but then the last name.
They named it after a guy named Charlie, huh? Well, I don't think so. A Charlie horse is, I don't know why they call it a Charlie horse. I can tell you, though, that it's painful as hell.
But what's it feel like?
You've never had a Charlie horse.
I had a knot in my leg.
That's a Charlie horse. A painful muscle knot?
Yeah.
I've had that too with my foot.
Yeah, that's a Charlie horse, and it's painful as hell. You imagine having an illness like MS, where that's what you get all the time? So, and I've had bad ones, man. Especially if you don't drink enough water, you can... and I got one in the middle of shooting a television show once. And it was the most painful thing. I broke character and all kinds of stuff that makes directors mad. Anyway, New York man challenging wife for assembly seat. This is pretty funny. Maybe not. I sure hope it doesn't end with...
Yeah, broken funny if the guy kills her.
He's not going to kill her. The cliche that all is fair in love and war will be tested on Long Island, where Republican Mark Schimmel has announced he'll run to oust his estranged Democratic wife, New York State Assemblywoman Michelle Schimmel, from office. We questioned him very closely to make sure that this wasn't a form to fight a personal battle, said Frank Maroney, the North Hempstead Republican chairman, adding he was confident there would be a dignified, issue-oriented campaign about taxes and government spending. I hope he isn't getting cold feet as a result of all this notoriety, Maroney said, adding that Mark Schimmel informed the party that the couple had come to the end of the road in their relationship and were seeking a divorce. Michelle Schimmel, how can you say that it's not going to be personal?
They're getting a divorce right now?
Yeah, they're getting divorced now, and oh yeah, I think I'll run for the assembly seat that my wife occupies, my ex-wife. This guy, Frank Maroney, who is the North Hempstead Republican chairman, this is in the state of New York on Long Island, said, I hope he isn't getting cold feet as the result of all this notoriety. Schimmel informed the party the couple had come to the end of the road in their relationship. Michelle Schimmel's campaign spokeswoman did not immediately respond to a request for comment, and Mark Schimmel could not immediately be reached. The news was greeted with dismay by at least one observer, Mark Schimmel's mother, Irma. I can't believe he'd do a thing like this. I'm going to talk to him, Irma Schimmel told the New York Daily News. He'll never win anything against Michelle.
Oh, man. Wow.
That's bad. That mother-in-law, you don't like her.
I don't think so. That's his mom. That's the mother talking. She's the mother-in-law of Michelle Schimmel. He says he'll never win anything against Michelle. All right, man, so that's what's going on there in... I don't see how a cat can be... I don't see how you can be divorcing a woman and then, oh, yeah, I think I want to run against her for her assembly seat and say that it's nothing personal. I don't know, but...
Well, the guy said they questioned him really closely.
Well, yeah, they say a lot of... They say I question him really closely. Some people are... You know what? I don't want to say... We'll just wait and see what happens, you know. But some people, man, they can, I don't know, you know, some people, I shouldn't say this, but some people can lie pretty good. You know, if you really got it in for your ex, you know, some people got to move on, man. God, you know, just move the hell on.
Yeah, you ought to talk.
Shut up. You mean I ought to talk, man? I'm doing fine. The Obama administration is poised to remove an Iranian opposition group from the United States list of terrorist groups, officials briefed on the talk told the Wall Street Journal. This is going to upset Tehran as nuclear talks between the countries intensify. The exile organization, the Mujahideen-e-Khalq, or M-E-K, was named a terrorist group 15 years ago for allegedly being involved in assassinating U.S. citizens before the 1979 Islamic Revolution in Iran. But the group had pursued an aggressive lobbying effort in Washington to clear up its status. Being on the list means MEK's assets inside the United States are frozen and it is blocked from fundraising.
Why are they going to do that?
Well, these guys were a terrorist organization assassinating U.S. citizens before the Islamic Revolution. That makes these cats a part of whatever the revolution was that ousted the Shah. And yes, I understand it was an Islamic revolution, but there are a lot of competing groups. And as Voltaire said, all revolutions eat their young. Now,
what does that mean?
Yeah, what's that mean?
It means that what it means? I'll tell you what it means.
Yeah, what does it mean?
I'll tell you. What does it mean?
That all revolutions eat their young.
Yeah, I can't wait to hear this one.
I'll tell you what it means. It means that the ones that are the most vocal proponents sometimes of a revolution are sometimes the people, the very people who wind up getting their heads chopped off in the ensuing, you know, revolution. Like an example of that, Thomas Paine. He didn't get his head chopped off, but Thomas Paine was forgotten. He was just sort of cast aside by the revolution that he helped create. But there are other examples in the 20th century. Trotsky, Leon Trotsky, who was a confidant and an associate of Stalin, of Lenin, I should say, and Stalin's. But he broke with them philosophically, and he was hunted down and assassinated in Mexico in the 40s. So what happens is the revolution takes place, and many of the revolutionaries see the direction that it's going in, and they say, wait a second, that's not what I joined up for. And they find themselves out of favor. They find themselves a minority voice. They find, well, you better keep your mouth shut because this is the way we're going. Otherwise, you're a counter-revolutionary. And they find themselves the very victims of the revolution that they helped. So these people, the MEK, were probably a part of the Islamic Revolution until things went south on them. And they probably thought, this ain't exactly what what I signed up for. And they became a thorn in Tehran's side, the Islamic Republic side. And so the United States has taken them off of this terrorist group, probably convinced that these people are no longer a threat to the U.S. Their main target is the Islamic Republic in Tehran. Like it says right here, it's a move sure to upset Tehran.
They don't like it.
No, they don't like it. They don't like this group. Being on the list means they get their assets frozen. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton has yet to make a final decision, senior U.S. officials told the Wall Street Journal, but they suggested the department is looking favorably on the request to remove MEK from the terrorism list if it continues to leave a former military base in Iraq where it has been living in exile. MEK already has renounced terrorism, though residents of the encampment known as Camp Ashraf have feared retribution if they leave the camp and return to Iran. There are 1,200 left at the camp. What the hell? What are they doing there? Why don't we blow their asses out of there?
Probably let them stay there.
The world-famous Phil Henry Show is produced by Dan Northcraft and Phil Henry. That's the end of the show, bud.
Oh, okay.
And, of course, we invite you to join us online at philhenryshow.com, where you can get live streaming video of our broadcasts each and every night. So don't forget, The Phil Henry Show right here, and also philhenryradio.com. philhenryradio.com is a spot where you can get yourself a listen to our archives for free, 24 hours of free streaming. And 1 week from today, of course, it's going to be our podcast, the free Phil Henry podcast. We'll see you guys later on tonight. Until then, let that be a lesson to you.
Phil Henry.
Yay!